Welcome to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. I'm Michael Ferrari.
I'm Ryan Scholl.
Please join us as we explore how artificial intelligence is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time. Get ready to discover the human side of technological innovation. On this episode, we are joined by Jeff Teague, Associate Director of Information Security. Please join us as we speak with Jeff about how him and his team are utilizing AI to help bolster their cybersecurity efforts, the importance of knowing your data and how to protect it, as well as how he's seeing AI used across campus. Okay, we're back again with another episode. Ryan, why don't you tell us about our guest today?
We are sitting here with a bona fide Wake Forest basketball legend. He was ACC Player of the Year. He earned a first team All-ACC selection, as well as second team All-American honors. He led his team to a consensus number one ranking in the polls. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Teague.
Ryan, I think you have the wrong Jeff Teague.
Correct. You have the wrong Jeff Teague.
Take a look at this. Okay, sorry. Let's try this again. This guy is much better on defense anyway. He is a stealth defender of our digital borders, protecting the pedagogical bits and bytes of this hallowed institution. He is the Associate Director of Information Security. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Teague.
Now you have the right Jeff Teague. Yeah, that's the correct one.
And that, boys and girls, is why you shouldn't always trust the output from generative AI. You must always remain the human in the loop and verify the results. Searching Jeff Teague Wake Forest in Claude or Gemini or ChatGPT will return information about the young man who contributed far less to Wake Forest than our esteemed colleague here, Jeff Teague.
And you'll find me further much down on the list of the Google output or the AI out. And I definitely don't make as much as Jeff Teague does now, but I'm very appreciative of working here.
But I wanted to do that, Jeff, and I know that was kind of corny.
No.
But the reason I wanted to do that was to basically show people why you can't immediately trust the results.
Exactly. You have to validate what you see, and you ask the right questions. So if you said Jeff Teague, Information Security at Wake Forest, you'll get me.
You sadly, not in Claude or ChatGPT.
Oh, that means I've hit myself really well, so that's good. But thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Jeff, you are always on the front lines of any technology we have. So you have to know about the different tools we use, the different strategies we use. So I'm sure when generative AI hit the scene, you had to really know about it. You had to jump into your research.
Yes, we had to do research, and we also had to learn how to adapt. For example, being transparent, the security team was kind of on the back end of a lot of AI implementation on campus because a lot of researchers, you know, saw it, wanted it, and started playing around with it. So we had to sit back and figure out a way to not slow down process, but make sure we maintain security. And being transparent, we are still working with that every day. So yes, I knew about AI back in the 80s when I was in undergrad. I actually took class in artificial intelligence back then. So it shows it's been around for a long time. It's just now people are seeing it in their everyday life. So back then we learned about it, took some classes in it, but now you're seeing the day usage of it. So
the really big term that everybody uses is the ChatGPT moment.
Right.
November of 2022.
Right.
Was generative AI on your radar before that?
It was indirectly. Like, for example, whenever a person wanted to do a new application or new tool, we would assess them, the application tool for its security. And sometimes we would see like applications that would start giving you the suggested words or suggested theories. And we understood that was part of the application. So when ChatGPT came about, we're like, wait a minute, this is generative AI with the learning model, et cetera. How are we going to tackle this? So that's where we had to really deep dive in understanding how ChatGPT worked, how it's trained. Big thing to learn is what version do you have? What how is it learning? Okay. That was our big challenge. So, but yeah, it's almost like a certain day in cybersecurity history when ChatGPT broad audience of the world.
So. Because like you said, AI was around, and even the Grammarly was around.
Exactly.
The autofill from Google, you know, whether that was in your email or in your searches.
Right.
So that stuff was always around, but that ChatGPT moment,
right.
I mean, that hit everybody like a frying pan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And me as a security guy, I'm always, is it really what it says it is? Should I be using it? The painter's house always need to be painted. I've always been the last person to really jump on board with the tool just because of how I assess things.
Me too.
So I kind of waited for what Wake Forest is proposing for people to use. Like now I have Notebook Elium and Gemini. I'm fortunate to have one of the pro licenses to try it out. And because I want to know where my data is used, which is one of the key points I would say to anybody using AI, know what variant you have. And how is your data being used within that application? Are you part of the LLM model training where your data is pumped into the cloud, the mass data lake, and used for the algorithm? Or are you using the tools of the AI to really just hone in on your own data needs? And I always shift towards, hey, wait a little bit and use the tools that have been evaluated and know where my data is. So
it's easy to see with like visual things like videos and image generation, but like using the chats, like even in the year and a half or so I've really been like using them, you can see the big jump in like quality and stuff. So I'm curious what it's like from your perspective, like seeing it just get so exponentially like improved.
What's shocking is when you validate your answers, right now it's 80%, 90% on a first search is pretty accurate. Like for example, we were in a meeting the other day and someone used ChatGPT to research one individual we were talking about that was part of a Better Terms incident. And so they were able to ChatGPT was able to capture part of actuality what the person did. Without even us typing a name on Google. And the other part he brought up was from a scientist over in Europe. So the point is, it's pretty darn accurate. But still, you have to question what you're getting.
Because you might get Jeff Teague, the basketball player.
Exactly. You might get Jeff Teague, the basketball player, when you're asking cybersecurity questions. Now, if you want to know strategy or MBA history, you'll get the wrong guy if you come to me. But yeah.
Yeah, which is very interesting because I've been hearing about like AI and being tested out with like job applications and stuff. And Ryan and I were talking earlier. I know someone with a similar name as mine, but let's just say they've lived a bit differently of a life. So then it's suddenly like, okay, now if they're plugging this in and they get the wrong money.
Right.
Well, the other Ryan Scholl that I've actually met is a former Blue Angels pilot. Okay. Now he's an admiral in the Navy.
Oh, okay.
For a long time, I appeared ahead of him in Google searching. He has now overtaken me. But I've met him in person. Oh. I had to show him my driver's license to prove my name.
That's so funny.
So I've never done that. I've never put my name into the search. I put it to Google. I've never done the generative AI to see.
Yeah, and again, it's going out to the internet. So if your presence is not on the internet, it's not going to find a lot because that's the starting point for most information. But the main thing, and what I've seen over the years is marketing is huge for AI, and it's like Y2K back in the day. Everybody started adding the Y2K that we were our Y2K approved. Now everybody, we have AI in our house.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
It's really annoying because what does that mean?
Yeah. And then everybody has what Copilot or Pilot or something in their product. So we have to be very succinct in what we're researching. That was my hang up. Even in talking with the application salespeople or technical people, one week you would get, hey, ChatGPT had these versions and these types. Well, actually it was Claude product. And then the next week we met with them and they had a new introduction of a new platform that someone had already heard about that we were like, wait a minute, what's the differences? Why do you have this?
Oh, gosh.
Even even they could not convey accurately the differences in the versions, et cetera, because the technology is changing.
So Michael and I have talked before about how there's about 19 different ChatGPTs and 17 Geminis.
Right.
And so that gets a little... So let me stick on that thread slightly. So let's focus on just the LLMs. Let me see if I can list some of these. Gemini, ChatGPT, Claude, Grok, DeepSeek, Meta. What am I missing? There's probably six or seven.
That's too many for me to keep track. Okay.
So I named a lot. ChatGPT is like the Kleenex or the Xerox.
Exactly.
Right? They have the brand name recognition. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses it.
Correct.
Wake Forest has mostly picked, well, didn't even mention Copilot. Wake Forest has mostly picked Gemini because of our agreements with Google. And we have different kind of agreements with Microsoft. So we have Copilot as well. Both of those are under our consumer data protection.
Right.
So from the security side, can you talk about using those two products, Gemini and Copilot, versus the ChatGPT, Claude, Grok?
Sure. Well, let me also add, like, if you are considering getting a new AI tool that's not on our list that Ryan just mentioned, you can always reach out to our team, the information security team, and we can help you assess it and make sure you're doing the right thing. Going back to your original question, we have reviewed those products and confirmed that what we have at Wake Forest, our data is best protected as it can be in an AI model. And what that means is when a user is using the Wake Forest IS managed product, we're showing that our data is getting stored and utilized within the AI tool in a controlled manner. We're not smeared in with the world's learning model. So therefore, you can assure that you don't have to wear your data governance hat and be concerned about what inputting you're putting into the tool. So if you want to do something a little bit sensitive nature with your academic data or your financial data for using the AI products that IS has talked about, you can assure it's controlled, secure, et cetera. If you're using another tool like ChatGPT-free, there's no guarantee that what you type in is not smear the world in the learning model. So don't use unassessed products without wearing your data governance hat. So if you wouldn't want that data being sent to your grandmother or put on the side of a bus or whatever, don't really put it in ChatGPT. You can use it for your bland emails or whatever, but be assured that when you're using the stuff that like Gemini, Copilot, and the enterprise models, it's secure and safe.
So just to clarify and reiterate, you're not saying not to use those other models for general stuff. Just if you want to protect your Wake Forest data, your PII,
right,
all that other stuff, use Gemini or Copilot.
To the specific versions that we have attested to. I have to be specific with that because we all know that, like you said earlier, there's seven or eight versions of different location that could be there. Because we're trying to straddle the line of research, people using apps, but being secure at the same time. So we always say, you know, try to use what we have assessed. There's a couple of professors in the law school who teach courses around technology and technology law. They have a huge list of apps that they're introducing their class to for the research purpose to understand law. Mm-hmm. So the challenge with us is 20 people are using this. We just give kind of a cursory review to make sure it's a sound product and all that. Give people guidance on the research mode so they can do their own research, knowing full well that Wake Forest most likely would not have all 30 of these products outside the research environment. So it's a challenge of education and research. While you have a finance or the board of trustees wanting to use products, we really assess those to make sure they're secure. But still, you also have to test to where is your data? Where is it located? How is it being used by the model, et cetera? and other features that are being done with the AI model. How is it updated? You know, was it giving you all kinds of things? So it's really wearing your data governance, your security, and your analyst when you're choosing any dish one. Yes, analyst means, is it safe?
And then the last comment I'll make about these LLMs, and you can add your own color to this. There's many tools out there, like you said, which claim they have AI, and they're really just wrappers around these LLMs. So it behooves you to understand what models underneath.
Exactly. So there's certain products that really have ChatGPT as a core engine to doing the model. So if you go to your applications and start poking, like say you're researching, you want to do something, how we analyze it is, one, you ask the technical questions, go to their websites, go to the Google store, the App Store, poke around on terms, privacy policy, and look at what they say. And if it's an ethical and organized company, they'll tell you, we don't train with your data. We do train with your data. We have our data centers here, et cetera. So there's a pattern to a well-formulated company's overview on the web that you can use to review, figure out what product you use.
Well, you heard it here. This is our workforce policy. Straight out of the mouth of Jeff Teague.
Well, to clarify, we are still working on the workforce policy for AI usage. But the key thing I want to mention is try to work with IS to validate it. Also, talk to your managers or your students or whoever you're giving your input to when you use these tools and make people aware, hey, this is AI. Or also, the most formidable way is just have a conversation before you use the tool. You know, don't invest your time if your peers or your managers want you to a certain route with AI tools. You need to make people aware of how you're using them and communicate with them.
Yeah. To piggyback on like everything you said, I kind of approach it with crypto in mind, where you see how crypto take, and then now I see nonstop, here's this new whatever coin, and it's just like, I don't know. I'm very cautious. I feel like it's just a tale as old as time where you see something take off and I'm just always worried about bad actors, or they tell you what they're doing or not doing, but do I really believe you?
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely agree with everything you said.
And with you actually picked out a tool for your voice. What was the tool that you...
For my voice, you said?
Yeah.
11 Labs?
Yeah, 11 Labs. So we learned about that and we did behind the scene review to make sure it's a very reputable product, how the data was stored. So you got it, but behind the scenes, our team evaluated it for all those security features and that. Since you're the only user, we documented you're the only user of it, but it is on our list of something we've assessed. And if other people want to use it, we can evaluate how many people need to use it, et cetera.
Yeah. So. Which is honestly like a huge weight off of my shoulders, because like, I mean, I know I would hate to just make a bad decision and then be like, hey, you know, guys, can you help me with this?
Yeah. Part of our jobs too is to help people out of situations.
Yeah. You mentioned just now that you evaluated 11 Labs, and I'll say that's amazingly useful tool. Is there somewhere people can go to find a list of tools that evaluate?
We're working on that right now. We're working with Mary Jones's team and Mitzi Wright. We're going to get to a point of having a table where you document the tools that have been evaluated, the level of usage, what they're recommended for, et cetera, which is on proposal to go forward. But the key thing is, until that gets published, just ask one of us, like an InfoSec, wpu.edu, or Mary Jones's team, and we can. And one strategy is, because there's so much, we have to do a risk-based approach when we evaluate it, because we realize there's 5 people on the security team, really. And so counting everything that we do, vendor evaluation takes a lot of time, so it's not everybody's job. So what we do a risk-based approach is, we'll look at your tools and say, what are you using for? And the ones that are very high risk of data input, we definitely evaluate this. And the other ones we'll get to eventually.
That's something I think is a really good move on Wake Forest's part, is I know people in other industries or other institutions, and some of them are still just choosing not to address it like whatsoever. So like being in some of those meetings about approved tools and all that, it's very cool to see also the approach of like, if they're like exactly like what I did, is like there's this tool I would like to use, and you know, actually having it explored, possibly getting approved. So I think that's like really cool to see the action and open-mindedness of it there.
That is because we allow a lot of, we allow all machines personally be an admin on their own machine here right now. And other schools and other universities lock it down. You cannot load except to the approved list. It's never been a strategy here.
So we've touched on a couple of these tools and you're evaluating. So what are you seeing people use on campus?
I'll give the examples of usage rather than the names, because in honesty, there's so many tools to keep up. So for example, specifically the security team is looking at, we have our service tickets to come in for people all over campus. We're using NotebookLO to correlate like a canned response to show consistency in the message to campus for a specific type of tickets. So if we have a new security analyst, they could say, what do I answer for phishing? It's going to come back with all the responses that we put in to the individual. So it's cutting back all and going through all our wiki documents or our, you know, documents. It's going to come back with a canned response easily and be used as a training tool. We're also looking at how we can help our vendor review process using NotebookLM. So for example, Microsoft would have its own NotebookLM module, and we have the different inputs for their documentation, and we can have the notes on the output showing how it's been reviewed for our vendor reviews. Whenever you take the NotebookLM class that Ryan and Sarah Wojcik Gross did on campus, we noticed that finance groups were there asking questions, how do we put our policies and procedures in NotebookLM to have a corresponding area? BI team has a monthly meeting, and people have actually come forward with campus usage, such as advancement developers using certain tools to help common code. It generates the code quickly for them from a library. People using it for research mode, people using it to catalog types of data they're using. Lots of data analysis scenarios on campus. And then there's other projects for faculty where they take a tool, use it, and they come back with what results in education, their studies, they've been able to for the AI tool. And again, I'm keeping it kind of vague because, you know, they're very specialized projects that I don't own, so I don't want to detail the data or usage, but it's basically making life more efficient, easier, and repeatable. So
we talked a little bit about the ways people should use it, protect data. Can you go a little deeper into what data is safe to use and maybe some recommendations on how people should use these tools?
Sure.
And I guess also while you're thinking about that, There is a difference between a web version and potentially a hosted version. I know we don't host too many AI applications at the moment.
Correct.
But obviously down the road, we could open source something and host something. So there is a difference there. So if you could touch on all of that.
Sure. And I'll attempt to keep up with that. So basically, let's start from the Wake Forest Information Security Policy. They have data classification, three buckets, general public use, internal use, and confidential. So the Wake Forest world, confidential is definitely personally identifiable information, or PII, or payment card industry, PCI, or HIPAA, actually not HIPAA, though we don't have, or FERPA, the educational data. So basically what I mean is confidential data. If you use AI tools on confidential data, only work on making it not be able to identify a person before you. So what I'm trying to say is, if you put in Jeffrey T and my social security number into model, that is potentially a problem no matter what tool you use, because it is equating my name to PII. If you wanted to put in the social security number by itself, I'd really consider only putting it in the approved products for your data analysis. But try to steer away from anything element in general. For your internal Wake Forest document or public use document, just be aware that you need to have good data going into the approved model. And if you're steering to a research AI product, just be aware that you have to validate your data output. So in summary, good data in gives you good results. Confidential data in steered towards the very, very secure approved products, but still be aware the data needs to be anonymized.
Well, here's a cool trick. Do you want to develop a synthetic testing data?
Yeah.
You can ask an AI to do that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, give me fake credit card numbers, a fake social security.
Absolutely. Yeah. I learned that in one of the podcasts I listened to. A lady was talking about she creates fake databases for testing.
Interesting.
So she didn't have to do it herself. She says, give me this database with 100,000 records.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Like, boom, right? That's a little meta, right?
Yeah.
You ask the AI to create
your data for you.
Data to put it back into the AI.
But again, that again is you're validating the output and you're assuming that what you're getting back is, you know, not valid SSN numbers, for social security numbers, which is a good assumption because the many years these tools have been around, you think it's pretty lock solid. It gives you back fake SSN numbers. So you had a lot of questions. So let me try to unpack it some more. So basically, think of the web version because you're connected to a web model. You're connected to a software as a service, you're connected to the cloud, you have to know the controls, you have to know how the app is working, where your data is, because you're exposed to the world in theory. So you have to know your data. And if you are, again, doing research on sensitive data, you are normally trained for that, your manager knows about it, and you're just keep within the guardrails of what you're working with. The only thing is that I've seen people when they're generating their code over in advancement or other parts of campus, they're using it for basic functionality, and they're also using it for test data, but they themselves are knowing that those routines and functions are very internal use only, but very basic calls. What else can I unwrap on that? Kind of lost it.
Well, no, I think that's what I was asking about, using a tool that's hosted in the cloud
right.
versus something, you know, an open source that we're hosting.
Yeah.
I don't think, from what I understand, we're doing too much of that.
I know, right.
HPC team is doing a little bit, but it's not open to all off campus.
Yeah.
In the future, we may do that.
And if they, in the future, in the ideal world, if we do that, then again, security team and even legal, whomever the parties on campus we pulled in to evaluate the environment, evaluate how things are being used and all that, to present campus with guardrails. But again, it's that challenge between research and operationalization or creating stuff. What's your favorite tool for day-to-day efficiency?
The general LLMs are great for different things. I would say my go-to is Notebook LM. It's so useful for a variety of reasons, whether you're trying to just need a document or synthesize a bunch of disparate information or learn something on one topic. That to me is probably the most useful tool that I've found. But beyond that, I do use the general LLMs to create content. My pendulum is kind of shifting a little bit. I still go to Google a lot for searching, but I've moved to Perplexity or U.com a little bit for some searches, depending if I want a direct answer or if I want some links. Now I know Google's building in the AI feature into their search as well. So maybe my pendulum will go back to Google a little.
And that's your computer side just from coming out, right?
Yeah. I play with AI Studio a lot from Google. That I'd like to do a whole podcast on just that, so people understand the computer vision and the multimodal capabilities of that. That is unbelievable tool. To use for your phone or your computer. You can chat with it and do tutorials.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorites as well.
Well, and what you mentioned, what people campus are doing, there's other partners on campus, like the support person at Jennifer at the law school. She does a really good class on, you know, the evaluating AI results and making sure you have good prompts, and talked about how, you know, AI images or videos, you can kind of pick apart, detect it. There's a lot of the campus experts as well.
Michael, you use more of the multimedia stuff sometimes.
Yeah. I would say in terms of like what I use the most often, I find myself still using ChatGPT quite a bit, just because I have a bunch of like ongoing projects that I've been, you know, whether personal or work, but where it's nice to follow up and be like, hey, I did this. Can you help me with this?
Because there's a context window.
Yeah.
So each of your instances or prompts or your chats, I guess, are saved, and you can have that couple million token context window and go back to it.
Yeah. And it's not work related, but like there's one that I use for like, say, for instance, a meal plan. So it's very cool to be able to update it and say, hey, I'm thinking of this, and being able to see it like, yeah, compared to what you were doing before, here's the pros and cons. So I like keeping it around for that, because I already have some pretty well established like instances going on. And then for code, I've really come around to Grok.
Grok over Claude.
Full disclosure, I haven't used Claude, but I was banging my head against the wall for a little bit on a project that was really not that complicated. It was just kind of something I was testing out, but didn't want to spend too much time on, like researching and then refreshing my memory on how I would do something. Whereas something like ChatGPT, I was working with it for probably about 45 minutes and like almost getting in the ballpark of what I wanted. Grok got it on the first try, so I have to give it credit.
But you touched on one good point of you get an answer with AI, but true validated results takes time. So there's, you know what I'm saying? Like people like instant gratification.
Yes.
But you have to be aware when you implement it, you have to understand it, learn how to ask the prompts, learn how to validate the data, Ken, and use your analyst hat to make sure that what you're getting is what you need. So there is a little bit of up time.
Yeah.
And then the efficiency comes more. And, you know, once it's learned, you learned it, how to get things to work with it.
Yeah. I think doing some traditional, cursory like review of it is super useful, because I found I can't remember the exact example, but there was kind of this like niche question I had or something that I assumed wouldn't be like very easy information to find because it was so specific, and I got an answer from I think it might have been ChatGPT, but it was the same exact answer of the only result that I could find that was even in the ballpark.
Yeah.
So you know, if you just went to ChatGPT, you take it at face value, and then it could be wrong, you know.
So I'm going to jump in there where Jeff should have interrupted you, but I'm going to put on my security hat. Knowing these models, some of them have training cutoff dates, and some of them can search the web and some can't.
Right.
For instance, Claude is an incredibly popular tool for creative writing and coding, but it doesn't have the ability to search the web. Mm. So it can't go bring up-to-date information.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can trick the LLMs to tell you what their training cutoff date is. Half of them won't tell you, but you can somehow figure it out to trick them. Some of these tools, their cutoff date is 2022.
Wow.
So I learned something new today.
So while they may have the knowledge to be trained and can produce something, they can't answer questions on what's happened in the past two and a half years.
Right.
So there's a difference between asking it to produce something novel and then searching for information. So you That's true. Need to know your LLM and validate your outputs.
Right.
Because some tools can search the web, some can't. Some have earlier training dates, some don't.
That's cool. That's all or something new today.
Yeah. That is a good point. Because I find a lot of times specifically programming related, even if it seems like a really specific issue you're having, a lot of times you can find something online like a Stack Overflow post or something where some guy 8 years ago had the same problem as you, and thank God you found the answer. So that's where, I'm assuming then that some models just wouldn't possibly be able to find that.
Exactly. If somebody posted something in Stack Overflow last week,
they might be able to see it.
Yeah,
chances
true.
Are some of those models don't know about it.
Yeah.
Well, one of our security tools that our team uses the AI functionality really is helpful for the query commands that we have to write. It's a locked set of commands that tool uses. So since that doesn't change much, we're able to like experiment with how we query the different logs up front. So that helps us, you know what I'm saying, really quickly and really well. But you're right. If you're doing more of research-based or more up-to-date topics, you have to be aware of its training dates and model. That's good.
So you just brought up an interesting topic that I completely skipped over when I was thinking about the topics to talk to you. We've talked about the end-user facing tools. What does the security team use internally in terms of AI to create this great defense for us?
I will talk about what our SecOps team does in general, I'm totally dependent on that team to the tool. It's Seth Stein, Jose Gazzaro, Chris McLaughlin, myself, Krista Davis, Michael Wright. We all meet and we go through one of our tools that we are implemented. It's a security incident event monitoring tool. And what it does, it takes all the information from tons of logs. And Seth has created rules to trigger, to evaluate the logs, to determine that someone is attacking our network, if a computer is going to a known bad, various very sophisticated things he's aware of. The Google product, when you want to query the data that all these logs are coming in, you can use AI again to go to those command library to help you drill in to say that you need to find a student computer that went to a null website for cheating because you're working on an authorized incident that the DNS students has approved. So we can run a query to determine, I want to know who went to x.com website. Well, not X, it's actually valid. I'll say jeffcheatsite.com, which is made up.
No, that was a pretty popular one.
Yeah. So the student was going to jeffcheatcom.site and they were in Faro Hall during a test. Our tool, we can query and say, hey, I want to determine the student sitting here, type in real English the query that we want to run, and the AI tool will come back with an estimate of what the actual syntax with the tool needs to be. Now, sure, we have to play around with it for 20 or 30 minutes, determine, you know, the accuracy of what the variables coming back in, but we can take our English question, input it, and AI comes with the syntax that we need to run in tool to run the log analysis, which helps me because I'm not in the tool every day. And so when other people are PTO, I was asked to do this. I was able to use that AI component to take my English words to get at least down to, I'll put down. And of course, it's all then we go into the tool, but we always have to validate it because our work, we always validate our output two or three times because it's, being on the security team, it could be an incident, which means you could be audited yourself. You could be going to executive management or the dean. So we have all of our validation things that we do before we all up. So, but yeah, that's one of the tools. I mean, it's pretty cool. You just type it in and it's like, you know, the kid was sitting in this building at this date and time, and we had to determine, did they go to that site? And the whole process of the work starting is document it and we'll approve it before we go look at anything because of our security team stuff. Actually, I'll say this, Ryan, a lot of the names that you mentioned for tools are even, I've not heard of them, so I've learned a lot today. But
what else do you want to let our listener know?
I'll take from me personally. All right. For me personally, I view AI as been around for a while. Just keep on your safety hat, your security hat, and your data hat when you're using with the tools. Don't use it to cheat. Don't use it to, what I mean by that is, it's serious because we have cases where we have to investigate individuals who use AI inappropriately in a classroom setting and an approved investigation. But use AI to research, evaluate, make your life more efficient. If you have questions at Wake Forest about AI, reach out to Ryan, myself, and ask, you know, can you help guide me on what we need to do? Information security website will have some information in the future about AI tools. Just can also let your manager or your peers know how you want to use it.
Is it safe to say that anything you're doing with AI, you still need to follow ethical use policy?
Of course.
And honor code, all that stuff still applies.
Right.
Just you apply it to...
That's a good way of saying AI. Yeah, exactly. You know, those are inherent policies at Wake Forest campus follow. Just continue that with your endeavors and the new technology.
Because let's boil this down. While AI is its own thing now, it's blowing up. You could look at it like just another application. The goal computer use
right.
would apply just as if we're evaluating another CRM tool.
Exactly. And the old standard I go by is if you use input resources that you would copyright or talk about in a research paper, give credit to people. If you're using them input in your tool, you know, give them credit as well. A lot of people that buy them their papers or their presentations have, you know, at Notebook LM was used with these input sources. My daughter did her thesis at App State, and she upfront said AI was not used in my thesis. They're teaching people to say, hey, I used it or I didn't use it. So just give credit where credit's due.
I'm curious I always like to know if people find a use for AI in like their personal projects or if you use it outside of work.
That's funny because it goes back to the painter's house and the painting. Yeah, a lot of times when I get home, I'm not on my computer, but I would use AI for, you know, like movie or music research, like compiling a list of must-see movies.
Oh, that's cool.
Or either, you know, help for find my Spotify list for obscure 80s and 90s music. That's kind of my thing I'll do. It'd be more for like my personal research.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
And then at time, can actually look at my old programming books I had in college. The program language was called Lisp, L-I-S-P.
Yes.
Yeah, and we had this guy from IBM come in and teach the class, and he gave you like a bank of cars models. And the TA would grade us, were, you know, we'd ask personality questions and come with the car model to your personality, which was really hard because we had to ourselves do the prompts, do training of the Lisp model, doing the parameters, but you got graded on how the TA thought your personality with the Audi versus NGE.
So when we title this episode, it's either going to be Painter's House Needs Painting or The Cobbler's Kids.
You're like, honey, just you should.
And I have two daughters. They're in college and grad school, and they hear me talk about AI. So when they're TAs with their they actually tune to hear people talk about how they use it in college. And they're like, wait a minute, doing this or this.
So you're going to love this conversation I recently had with a high school teacher, a friend of mine, and local teacher in Winston-Salem, Forsyth County School System. You think he teaches civics? There's no school policy.
Right.
So each teacher is sort of up to making their own policy. And most of the ones that he talks to, they ban it.
Right.
They absolutely ban it because the trust level for these high school students, the default is cheat, not use it to augment your abilities.
Right.
Where a lot of professors now at Wake are flipping the script and say, let's expand the pie.
Right.
Let's see what you can do with it. It's fascinating to me that just, you know, going from one level of education to the next, it's completely different.
Right. And when it goes to, you know, guardrails, rules, policies, how open-minded you are, how risk-based you are, you know, how you teach a person to use it ethically and all that, which ethics discussion is not.
Yeah. I've already said we're going to get a philosophy professor in here.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, on that topic that we were just discussing, I'm a firm believer that it's way easier for me to, use something more safely if I'm
aware of it and have a little bit, at least a little bit of knowledge about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily people have to start using it a bunch, or if you're not a fan of it, completely change your mind. But I think it would definitely help your awareness of being able to see when something is AI, because even right. working with it, it's kind of like, that sounds like something that would be put out by AI from experience of working with it. And then especially when you're talking about any kind of like graphical natured AI, such as generated images, it's still baffling to me how many people get tricked by AI images. And unfortunately, it's in some really terrible situations, you know, like natural disasters and stuff. That's another instance where I think, like, if you're, even if you don't like it, like if you're become at least familiar with it, you're a bit safer and you're less likely to get like tricked or deceived.
Yeah. And actually, I have on my to-do list to look at some deep fakes, not just on the visual, but also the audio aspect as well.
Of course.
Yeah. Because, you know, you hear those, what's the couple of myths of, you know, the phone call you get where you say hello and that's all you hear. Some people are saying, well, they're capturing your voice and they're going to use that to generate another AI message to somebody else, which is not a truth. But I just want to do more research on how the bad people are using it for audio and video.
Yeah. I'm a decent movie buff to some degree. And so, like, you know, I've watched tons of breakdowns on film and animation, CGI. And like the big thing that you hear a lot is like, audiences will know something is wrong, even if they don't know why. And even if
uncanny valley.
Yeah, exactly. Uncanny valley. You may even be able to take a still frame of something and be indistinguishable. But then when you see it in action, like
something's just not real.
Yeah. Like, so it's like, I feel like AI is like a very similar thing. So like deep fakes, like if in stuff like that, like you were discussing, like once you start like researching that, like, I think it's kind of like, oh, okay, this is like, this is way more obvious than before I looked at it. Like it becomes, the flaws in it become way more highlighted.
Well, you mentioned one thing is analyze it. I think you have to slow down, you have to analyze, put on your questioning for any output you get from an AI app or a tool, as well as if you're receiving something from somebody that you don't really consider, is this an AI generated thing?
Yeah.
There's some emails I get from people. I'm like, is this AI generated?
Mm-hmm.
We actually had a vendor call one time, the IS team, where it was a problem. And we went on the call. The camera popped up. It didn't show a person. And the voice was very monotone. And then at the very end, they're like, well, I didn't answer your question. Please, 1 minute, level two or support will come on the line. And everybody on the team were like, this is AI. We're not talking to a person, you know. This is AI bots.
Yeah, that's scary. Some of them are it's getting so indistinguishable almost. It's really surprising. Even like the 11 labs we talked about messing with that. And I wasn't even using like their highest model. There were some parts where I was like, okay, this is like actually like weird.
What about people using social media sites where they have AI profiles where they're generating all these AI pictures and posting on Instagram? Mm-hmm. They have thousands of followers. I mean, like,
Or interactions you see, like there's a reason you see a lot of interactions on social media posts where they're saying, sometimes tons of them saying verbatim the same thing or, you know, slight variations of the same comment. Like, yeah, that's a good point. Social media.
All right, Jeff. Well, thank you very much. And with those millions you made in the MBA, you can buy everybody pro licenses for Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude or whatever they want to use.
I'll use your budget code, Grant. Clark, do that. But again, I'm Jeff Teague-IS, not the basketball player. So,
all right, well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Deeks.ai podcast, where Wake Forest innovators unpack the real-world magic of artificial intelligence through candid conversations. We hope you'll continue to join us as we explore how AI is transforming work across campus, one fascinating story at a time.